Welcome to another episode of the Financial Markets Insight podcast. Today, we're delighted to have Andrew Douglas on the show. Andrew is the chair of the UK Accelerated Settlement Task Force Technical Group, and we will be delving and discussing the subject of T+1. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks, David. Happy to be here.
So did I get the term right? UK Accelerated Task Force Technical Group, is that right?
Yeah, it's a bit of a mouthful. Basically, it came about as a result of the establishment of the original AST under the chairmanship of Charlie Geffen. Charlie produced his report, which was published in March of this year. And one of his recommendations was, as we move into the next phase of the project, what was required was a technical group to deal with the technical issues that we expect to have to overcome in order to implement T+1. And that's where I came in. Charlie very kindly recommended me to be chair of that. And although technically, we'll probably use the word technically quite a lot in this podcast, I would have thought. But whilst technically the technical group didn't come into existence until April, which was when the government pronounced that it was happy with Charlie's recommendations, we have actually been working on this since January.
So an easy kickoff question. Most people in this industry are of the opinion this is a case of if not when we move to T+1. Is that right? Is that how you see it?
It is. And that was the conclusion that Charlie reached very early on and was the principal output from his report, which, as I said, was published at the end of March this year. And that was addressing the question, is it if or is it when? And it became very clear very quickly in the first stages of the project that this was a case of when rather than if. That sentiment has since been echoed by the EU Commission earlier this year. Commissioner McGuinness used the same terminology that from an EU perspective, this was a case of when, not if.
Yeah, I read that report, or the most recent one from the French regulator, the AMF, talking about a coordinated move to include those people not quite in the European project anymore, like us and the Swiss.
Correct.
And two questions then. Are we now, because I have read that in the past we were probably talking about aligning ourselves with the US and going early, but are we now convinced that we're going to move in unison with the Swiss and the rest of the EU bloc?
So the reality is, and I guess it's, you choose to phrase this, we've decided when we're going. We're going at the end of 2027. The question now is for the European Commission and for the Swiss authorities to determine whether they want to move at the same time, whether they want to move and whether they're able to move at the same time. Now, all of the feedback that I'm getting from the European side of things, from the Commission, from ESMA, is that an alignment with the UK's date is, let's say, a target.
Right. I like that. Very delicately put, because I didn't realise that was our date. I knew the date, but I didn't realise it was our date. Right, cool. That's interesting. So the Accelerated Settlement Task Force was set up in December 22 under a Sunak government. And obviously, we now have a new administration. Is that relevant? Have you experienced any changes because of that?
It's a question I've been asked a few times since the change at the top, as it were. No, it's not relevant in the sense that I have it indirectly through HMT, but I have confirmation that this project has the support of the current government as well as the previous government. So I, for one, see no reason for any change at all, mostly because this is the two fundamental things which this project brings is, firstly, it makes the UK more efficient to invest in. It may be an incremental efficiency, but if we get this right, automation is a key tool, and that will smooth the frictions in the trading process. So the UK will become more efficient / cheaper for investors to operate in. And secondly, if I may be so bold as to say that the UK is kind of leading the charge here. So it gives us an interesting view into what's happening in other jurisdictions. And I think both of those factors are play very heavily into the new governments, make the UK more competitive and try and get closer to the EU. So it ticks both of those boxes.
So you and I have talked about this in the past. It's not too late to get involved in the project. But my question, first question, was really, what does the industry need from government and vice versa? And I guess in part of that is anyone who wants to become involved in this, you know, I'm sure you can tell them they still can.
Yeah, I realised I was nodding my head, which for a vocal podcast wasn't much help. So let me put my head nodding into words. Yes, whilst we have been working on this project, as I mentioned earlier, since January of this year, and we are actually in the final stages of creating the draft recommendations for publication at the end of September, there is still time for folks to get involved. Now, one of the key things that I don't know if it's widely known, I've certainly said it to anyone who will listen, but that's not, I realise that's not everybody. But we have more than 450 volunteers from the industry who've been working on this since January. And they are drawn from, I think the current number is 116 different financial institutions. And that's the full range of market infrastructures from trading through to settlement. It represents every shape and stripe of market participant, whether that's fund managers, brokers, traders, stock lending folks, corporate action specialists, intermediaries that act between all of those, the custodians, etc., etc. And we also have oversight from all of the regulatory bodies in the UK, which is the FCA, PRA / Bank of England and HMT. And we also have a bunch of observers, interestingly, from the EU, who are keeping their eye on what we're doing. And that's the various industry associations. So it's EXTA for the CSDs, EACH for the CCPs, IFARMA for the fund managers. We will be publishing the draft recommendations at the end of September. And there will be a short consultation attached to that, because what I'm interested in is getting feedback from the broadest possible range of participants. So if you've not been a part of the process so far, I would be hugely supportive of you reading the draft report when it comes out and responding to the recommendations, realizing or remembering, should I say, that the recommendations are not the result of me sitting in a dark room with a couple of my best friends and thinking what would be nice for the industry to do. These are recommendations that have been derived from serious amounts of work by some very expert people in the industry. And so they need to be read in that context and understood in that context. And one of the things, for example, that I've said to the various parts of the task force repeatedly is we're all going to be asked to do things that we want to do and that we recognize are valuable, but equally, we are all going to be asked to do things that we don't want to do, but they are for the greater good of UK PLC. And people need to have that in the back of their mind when they read these recommendations.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very big subject. I mean, interestingly, because it wasn't my everyday job, what did we learn from the US move and how successful was that actually? And what can we learn that probably smooths our path?
So the US move was a success. We have seen reductions in fail rates. We have seen savings in the capital requirements. So by those two measurements, it has been a success. And I hope that we will also be able to be similarly successful with the plans that we have. In order to be similarly successful, what are the lessons that we learned from the implementation in the US? The first one, which Chairman Gensler reminded us of at our event, our industry event, was that you need to pick a date, you need to stick to it. So we are in the process of working out what the date for the UK will be. It will be sometime in Q4 27. So that was the first learning. And the second learning was the importance of outreach, the importance of education, because it became obvious that there are parts of the industry that even 2 or 3 months before the US went live, they had still not worked out what their plan was. They'd still not made the changes that were necessary. And there are a frightening percentage of projects which firms have embarked on specifically to adopt T+1, for which the end date was after the go-live date. So what I'm keen to do is to get, again, and I'm sure this is a theme we will return to time and time again, to get this project front and center in people's minds. It's not going to go away. You will need to do stuff, and you can't wait until a week before or a month before or even 3 months before and expect to be able to do this properly. There will be a degree of automation that is required. And this is why we've given ourselves this lead time into the project. So it's now, we're halfway through 2024, and we're talking about going live at the end of 27. So next year, there will be a plan which will look at what are some of the infrastructural changes. And I use infrastructural in terms of there will be rules that will be required to change. There will be rule books. There will be market practices that need to be updated. So all of that, I hope, will happen in 25 with a view to the firms being in a position to implement. If they haven't been able to do that in 25, then implementing it in 26, with a view to by the end of 2026, we're essentially ready to go in good time so that we can spend the bulk of 27 practicing.
I do remember reading that the US project was centralized around the communicate conversation, because it basically just needed everybody.
So I've changed that to educate, and communicate is implicit in that, because you can't educate without some form of communication. So there are things that in the US, I thought they were absolutely fabulous the way that they were executed. So, for example, there was a series of webinars on specific subjects using specific experts. And I would hope that we'll be able to put in place a similar education program for people. Education in the sense that it gives people the opportunity to ask questions.
Well, no doubt we'll have you back on FM Insights for another one of those, because
I hope so.
We're certainly happy to be part of the education process. I mean, the awkward question then, T+0, when?
If? I suspect that is also a question of when rather than if. It's just not now. And T1, I feel, is a necessary step to be able to move to T0 at some point. But at this stage, if you say T0 to a dozen folks, you'll get three or four different answers as to what T0 means. Is it atomic instantaneous settlement? Is it intraday batch? Is it end of day batch? So we need to get a bit firmer with the terminology. We also need to be a bit more comfortable with the underlying technology. And that has to become a little bit more ubiquitous than it is now. And there is a big question which remains unanswered with regard to T0. That's what you do if you've got no clearing and you have to settle gross. Is there enough money in the world to be able to settle gross? So someone somewhere, and it's not me, needs to do some work on that.
In all honesty, that was a deliberately controversial question for a bit of fun. I don't really think we were really talking about it.
But it is a question that people asked at the start. And my sense was people usually ask that because they didn't want to do T1.
Yeah, I guess that's probably true as well. I mean, I get it. And it's brilliant to know that the US model and the project worked arguably better than most expected in the end. I mean, I think with all these things, with preparation for like the Y2K problem, the T+1 issue, you know, these things work when they're properly planned. But there were definitely, I was at conferences in the run-up to 3 months before, people just pulling their heads out of the sand.
There were definitely concerns. And the report that Charlie produced about going, the UK moving by the end of 27, there were two caveats to that. One was, can we create some form of alignment with the EU so there would be one move for the European continent, as it were? And the second caveat was what happens in the US, because if the US was not a success, then that might call into question our own plans to move ahead. So that particular issue has now been sidelined. It is clear that the US was a success. I mean, I think the full value of the success will be seen not in the first 2 or 3 weeks or the first 2 or 3 months, but will be seen over a full cycle. So I think we'll understand the total success of the US move. I think it could take 12 months before we get to that point. But I think the important thing is that people see that there are some positives that have come out of this. And so there is now a growing swell of opinion that says, why do we have to wait till 27? Why can't we go earlier? Why can't we go in 26? Now, I think with the volume of work that needs to be done, I'm not sure that is viable. It's something I've got in the back of my mind and that I will be thinking about as myself and the task force steering group start to talk about the migration date. But my feeling is that 27 is a good date and 26 may cause more issues than it resolves.
So how much of this looks like it might cut and paste from the US application, and how much of it are we going to have to re-engineer?
So I think inevitably there will be some stuff that we can cut and paste, but I think it's less than you would probably imagine, because the UK and the US markets are fundamentally different. Okay, they're both about trading, but we have a much higher percentage, for example, of overseas investment in the UK than in the US, where there is a significantly higher domestic investment activity. We are slap bang in the middle of the global time zones. So we need to have a solution which allows US, North American and South American investors into the UK market as much as it allows people east of the UK into the UK market. And we have some fundamental differences in the way that we operate. I guess the most obvious one of those is the affirmations process, which we simply don't have. So we're not looking at the US as particularly a model, other than things, as I talked about earlier, such as the education, the need for education. We have our own market, and our market has its own peculiarities, which all of the recommendations that we've put together are designed to address. And I would say the amount of cotton paste is minimal.
Cool. Interesting. So what's the thing? The single thing that you think is going to be the thing that we end up having to work hardest on? Is there a single issue that you look at and go, that one could become a problem, and the earlier we get on it, the better?
This is where similarities with the US market abound, because all of the underlying processes that we have identified as problematic are the same as the underlying processes that were identified as being problematic in the US. The question is, how do we deal with them? So it's things like FX. It's things like opening hours of financial infrastructures. It's things like the dislocation of redemption and subscription timeframes for ETFs, where you've got some underlying securities on a T+1 and some on a T+2 cycle. So we will need to address a lot. Well, not a lot. We will need to address all of these problems in a way which suits investors in the UK market. So the underlying, that you asked what is the biggest issue. The single biggest issue that I think most firms will face is the decision to automate or throw more people at the process. And I sincerely hope that people, firms, will decide to automate, because throwing people at these processes is very much a short-term solution that in the long term simply won't work.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Process always wins. This has been a brilliant whistle-stop tour. Is there any last-minute thing you want to tell us about that I haven't asked you about?
Only thing, and I will say this to anyone who asks me, and that's keep your eye out for the reports. The draft report will come out at the end of September. There will be a short consultation associated with it, as we talked about earlier. The results of that will then be incorporated into the final report, which is due out at the end of the year. And the final report will basically have the detail of all the recommendations that we've made. And I give you a little insight into that. At the moment, in draft form, I've grouped the recommendations into three. There's the recommendations for the financial institutions, things that the banks, the brokers, the custodians, the fund managers have to do. There is a bucket of financial market infrastructure recommendations. These are the things that the CSD, Euroclear, and trading venues will have to do. And there is the regulatory recommendations, and these are the things that we're going to be asking the UK regulatory community to implement. One of the things that rings in my ears all the time, and I use this, are you familiar with the KISS principle? And one of the things that rings in my ears was speaking to a bunch of wealth fund managers, and we're all familiar with the US playbooks, and his organization had been involved in the US move. And his comment to me was, the playbooks were great, but they were too complicated. I couldn't work out what it was I was supposed to do and when I was supposed to do it. So one of the things that I am working with the task force to build is just a very simple pivot table. So it's interactive, and you can go in and you can say, I'm a fund manager. What do I sort? And it will tell you everything that you as a fund manager need to do. And it'll give you the dates that you need to do it by, and it'll give you other recommendations which are somehow related to what it is you have to do, so conditionality. And so that's where I want to get to, is the provision at the end of this year of a very simple tool that allows people to work out what it is they have to do in the next two and a half years to be ready for the implementation, because this needs to be, our implementation needs to be even more successful than the US, if that's possible, because we do have some slightly different issues to address.
I've got a final question, so we'll go with this one. So how do folks who want to get involved find you? What's the right route for them?
If you type in Accelerated Settlement Task Force UK, you'll see two websites. One is the HMT one, and one is the KPMG site. The KPMG site has links to other things. I do a quarterly summary report of what the task force has been doing. That's posted on there. The HMT one tends to be a little bit more, well, it is quite static, and it's got things like the terms of reference of the group, a link to the original report, but it doesn't have the kind of dynamic ongoing changes that we've got with the other one. So either of those I can be reached through.
Is that the same quarterly report that you put out on LinkedIn that I've already read?
It is. Well, that's the other thing. Find me on LinkedIn. I must get, I don't know, 10, 20, 30 LinkedIn requests a day from people who are interested in this project. So you can always find me on LinkedIn.
So just to remind you, everyone, Andrew Douglas, find him on LinkedIn. I've read that piece. It's very good. In summary, brilliant, Andrew. Thank you. I feel marginally more like the one-eyed man now in the Kingdom of the Blind. So it's been very enlightening. Thanks to you for coming on. Thanks to everyone who's listened. Hope anyone that needs to find you can find you via multitude of ways, Accelerated Settlement Task Force, and via LinkedIn. Thanks very much.
Thank you, David.